Hello and welcome to Media News. This is your host, journalist Frederike Geerdink, and this is episode 2 of Mountain View Podcast with KCK spokesperson Zagros Hiwa. Welcome, Zagros, and thank you for being my guest once again. In this episode, we will talk about the Turkish operations in ZAP and about the threat of Turkish invasion in northeast Syria. But may I first ask you how you are doing?
I am fine, thanks. I hope you and all your dear colleagues and audience are doing well.
Let's talk about the operations in the mountains, mainly in the ZAP area. The Turkish army from time to time admits that soldiers die in the operations, even admitting more than just one or two dying on some occasions. This is rather exceptional for them. Apparently, they are having a really hard time fighting the PKK. But of course, also the guerrilla forces are losing people. It seems the war is intensifying. Can you tell us more of the latest developments and the stage that the war is in now in ZAP, Afashin and other areas?
Well, relying on sophisticated technology and high firepower, using fighter jets, helicopters, armed and unarmed drones, howitzers, and mortars and missiles, the Turkish army had planned to invade the ZAP region in a relatively short period of time and to eliminate all the guerrilla positions there. In their own terms, they wanted to lock guerrilla in the ZAP region, but they themselves were locked against the resistance of the Kurdistan Freedom Guerrillas. Unable to make progress in the ZAP region in the areas of Krojaro and Shkafta Brindara and Karker, and being stalled there, the Turkish army changed the tactic and extended the operation to areas west of the ZAP River. The areas which in guerrilla terms are called the Hakkari Hill, the Judy Hill, the FM Hill, the Matina region. So for more than 2 months, 2 months and 3 days, the clashes have been continuing and the Turkish army has not been able to take control of the guerrilla positions. Of course, it has landed soldiers somewhere in some places, but they have not been able to uproot the guerrillas from their positions. And the Kurdistan Freedom Guerrillas have shown fierce resistance against the Turkish attacks. Heavy clashes have been continuing. And let's say a war is going on at the dimensions of the war in which is going on in Ukraine, but unfortunately, local and international media are not covering it. Till now, 1,075 Turkish soldiers have been killed. As to today, June 17, 1,075 soldiers have been killed, and near 200 have been injured. Also, three helicopters have been downed, and one tank and two armored vehicles have been completely destroyed. The Turkish army has made air attacks for 2,086 times by fighter jets, and also they have made attacks with helicopter gunships for 1,519 times. The Turkish army has been using all the conventional and unconventional weapons against the Kurdistan Freedom Guerrillas. Especially, they have been using thermobaric bombs and chemical weapons and poisonous gases. They have attacked the guerrilla position with poisonous gases and thermobaric bombs. Till now, they have used these poisonous gases and chemical bombs for 790 times. They have attacked with these chemical weapons against the guerrilla positions. The Turkish army has been doing all this with the collaboration of KDP, because KDP is encircling the guerrilla areas and cutting the contact between the guerrilla areas and putting embargo on them, and also providing hot data and intelligence to the Turkish army and to the Turkish drones, and let's say providing political and diplomatic legitimacy for the Turkish attack. So KDP is a part of this war against the Kurds.
Okay, you say that more than 1,000 Turkish soldiers have died since Operation Clawlock started. Do I understand that right? For many people, and for me too, I have to admit, that sounds like a number that's hard to believe. Can you explain how you come to this number? And can you explain how Turkey could possibly cover up the death of hundreds of their soldiers?
Well, during the clashes, there are two ways of determining the death toll of the enemy. The first one is that either the mobile guerrilla teams or the teams that are resisting in the war tunnels, they see that the soldiers get killed as a result of their action. And then after each action, these guerrilla units come together, and all these data are collected, evaluated, and then each team declares the number of soldiers which have been killed during the clashes. The other method is that you may also have seen in the videos, in very close blank point clashes, the guerrillas, let's say, go over and take control of the enemy positions. Then they film and they see the bodies. Even let's say they take the guns of those soldiers which have been killed and other military equipment, and they count them body by body by body. You may have seen that in the videos of the clashes which are being recorded via GoPro. Also, if there are only possibilities that some may have been killed, the guerrilla units don't give numbers. They say that some have been killed, but we have not been able to verify. So in those cases, the guerrilla units don't give numbers. They say some have been killed, but we have not been able to verify. So they will not be taken into account in the last and final statistics of the death toll of the enemy. So we can say that there is no exaggeration in all those things, in all those statistics that are being declared publicly. One other point that makes hard for others to believe in those statistics is that the Turkish media and the Turkish press have been totally silenced. Turkey is the largest. The biggest prison for journalists in the world. So, in the run-up to the coup of 2016 and after that, Erdogan silenced all the press. So mainstream media does not cover the death tolls of the soldiers. If one media covers those death tolls, the casualties of the Turkish soldiers, they will be banned. If it is TV, it will be closed. If it is newspaper, it will be banned. So the Erdogan and AKP MHP regime have full control over the press. So no free press can go and cover the operations independently. And all those tolls are being given via the Turkish army's. Let's say either Twitter account or official site. No independent journalist can go and verify those death tolls. Also, if some soldiers get killed, the families of those soldiers cannot hold a memorial ceremony for their dead ones, for let's say their brother, husband, whoever they are. Because the soldiers which are sent to the operations areas are not normal soldiers. It is a special army, specially created after 2011 and 2012. They are mostly made up of sergeants, non-commissioned sergeants, officers, field officers. These soldiers, these let's say hired killers, make a contract with the state. The state makes a contract with them. They say that if you get killed, we will not declare your death. We will not pronounce you dead at that time. They according to that contract, these officers, these sergeants, take a high salary, and they promise them that if they get killed, the state will look after their family forever. So these soldiers, which these officers, which come, let's say, to the combat fields, they know that if they get killed, there will be their death will not be declared, and there will be no memorial ceremony for them, because the public, if there is a memorial ceremony and condolence, the public will know it. So everything is kept secret. This is an aspect of the, let's say, dirty psycho war that Erdogan is waging against all the communities in Turkey, including the Turks, Kurds, and all other ethnic and religious minorities. They silence the press, the media, and let's say what they do in Kurdistan, the massacres, the crimes in Kurdistan are all done via a very special army of hired killers.
Also, I want to ask something extra about the weapons that Turkey uses. I hear you say that Turkey has used chemical weapons or poison gas at least 700 times. I've done some investigating into these claims, and British journalist Steve Sweeney has been on the ground in South Kurdistan to investigate. And he and also I can't prove that chemical weapons are used. Poison gases are again something else according to international law, and then there are incendiary weapons that Turkey may be using. Can you explain how you use these different terms, and why is it difficult for the PKK to provide solid evidence?
Well, Turkey has a dirty record of using chemical weapons against the Kurds from the 1937-38 Dersim massacre till now in Zap, Avashin, and Metina. And unfortunately, these cases of the use of chemical weapons get disclosed after long years have passed. Now, newly, we are, let's say, seeing documents about the use of German-made chemical weapons against the Dersim people in 1938. And now the Turkish army also uses chemical weapons, but the international institutions, some global powers, and some collaborators of the Turkish army here in the region, they cover up those war crimes, the use of chemical weapons. It seems that what is called the international community discloses the use of international community the use of chemical weapons when it is to their own interest. They even let's say create fake scenes of the use of chemical weapons when they feel the need. They have to convince the world public opinion to do a military operation against a specific region or country. We know the case in Syria and in Iraq, that after long years of investigation, they couldn't find traces of chemical weapons, but they invaded and looted and destroyed those countries on the basis of the accusation of using chemical weapons. So now Turkey uses chemical weapons, and especially from 2021 in the GAR operation, at that time we declared that Turkey has used chemical operation in the Siani cave against the prisoners of war, and the 12 prisoners of war along with six of our comrades lost their lives because of those chemical weapons. But no investigation was done. Even when the bodies had been taken to Turkey, let's say the Turkish officials did not let any independent investigation done on the bodies of dead soldiers. They were buried hastily. Also, we called on all international institutions, all interested circles, to come and to make investigation into the use of those chemical weapons. But no regional and national, international institution came to that area and no one made any investigation about that. Also in 2021, in Warkhale, in Tepesur, in all those areas, chemical weapons were used. Not only chemical weapons, but also thermobaric bombs. But let's say there was the silence of the international community against that. Even when in a counterattack, the guerrillas managed to take back one of those caves, we had the videos, the photos, the samples of the guerrillas which had lost their lives, had failed because of the chemical weapons. We managed to send those samples to Europe, to OPCW, but they did not accept that. They did not accept to make any investigation. They said that we have relations with Turkey. Turkey is one of the founders of OPCW, and you are not a state factor. So we are only dealing with the states, and we cannot accept these samples. So this is the hypocrisy and the double standards of the OPCW. It seems that they have financially been bribed by Turkey and by other NATO powers which are supporting Turkey in this crime against humanity. Till now, this year, from the start of the operation as of today, Turkey has used chemical weapons for 795 times in more than 2 months. 795 times they have used these chemical weapons.
Thank you. Let us talk about the tension rising in Rojava or northeast Syria, with Turkey again threatening to invade and occupy lands that are now held by the SDF or by forces affiliated with it. It seems likely that the first target is Tel Rifat, very close to Afrin, and possibly Minbij, which is defended by the Minbij Military Council. These two places are west of the Euphrates River, where the situation is different than east of the river, especially because west of the river, the main foreign influence is Russia. East of the Euphrates, the US still has a foothold. In Kobani Canton, both Russia and the US have a presence. It's complicated. So could you shed a light on the situation? Firstly, do you think Turkey is serious with its threat? Or is it just, again, trying to bargain with the US and NATO about Turkish wishes before it approves NATO membership of Sweden and Finland?
Well, it is not only a matter of bargaining. Turkey is quite serious in its genocidal campaign of demographic change and massacres against the Kurds and other ethnic and religious groups in northeast and northwest Syria. Turkey has based all its domestic and foreign policy on enmity toward the Kurds, on hostility toward the Kurds and all the democratic forces. So Turkey's threats are real and are serious in this regard, and the peoples of northwest Syria and northeast Syria should rely on their own capabilities to defend themselves against the threats of Turkey, because something like the Armenian genocide is going on in North Syria. Turkey wants to update the Armenian genocide, this time against the Kurds, against the Syriacs, against the remnants of the Armenian genocide, and against all the other ethnic and religious entities in northeast Syria. So the threats are real, and all the interested parties should do their best in order to prevent, and if done, to defeat the Turkish attack.
Those are strong words, Zagros, about massacres and the continuation of the Armenian genocide. Is this all really what you are afraid of?
Well, according to the Turkish constitution, all those people who live in Turkey are Turks. But this does not map into the demographic map of Mesopotamia and Anatolia. 32 different ethnic and religious identities live in Turkey or used to live in Turkey. So some of these identities were completely wiped out. They were subjected to genocide. Some were assimilated, and some were denied and massacred. So the Armenians, the Pontians, the Greeks, the Syriacs, they were subjected to genocide. Nearly 2 million Armenians, nearly half a million Pontians, and also thousands of Syriacs, Yazidis, Greeks, were subjected to genocide in the early years of the 20th century. Also, some ethnic groups like Circassians, like Laz, they were assimilated. And some groups like, let's say, the Kurds, they were denied. The existence of the Kurds were denied, and many massacres happened against them. The massacre in Dersim, the massacre in Galia Zilan. So the aim of this nation building process was to eliminate all the different identities in Turkey, and only to dictate the Turkish and Sunni identity on all these peoples. So in one way we can say that Turkey is the grave of more than 30 ethnic and religious Turkey has been built upon the grave of the Turkish nation state has been built upon the grave of more than 30 ethnic and religious identities. What is happening now in against the Kurds is we call it cultural and political genocide. You know, Turkey may not be able to kill all the Kurds because there are more than 30 million Kurds in Turkey. So the genocide that Turkey now wages, the genocidal campaign that Turkey now wages against the Kurds, is a kind of cultural and political, which is more brutal even than the physical genocide. Culturally, I mean, the Kurds cannot practice their own culture. The Kurds, let's say, cannot educate their children in their own languages. The Kurdish culture is being banned. Concerts get abolished. People get killed because they have whistled or they have singed in Kurdish. I mean, these are the things that have happened. We have the example of Barış Çakan, we have the example of Musa Anter, and many other cases of this complete denial against the Kurdish culture and identity. Also, politically, the Kurds cannot express themselves politically. The social fabric of the Kurds is being dissolved by a deliberate national policy of the Turkish state. The cultural fabric of the Kurds is being dissolved and eliminated. Also, there is zero tolerance for any self-administration, local democracy, and self-defense of the Kurds. These are all dubbed as terror, and people end up in prison. Now, according to the last statistics, 41% of HDP members, of HDP, let's say, grassroots, have been put into prison. And now, 17% of HDP members are in Turkish prisons. We are talking about 6,000 people. So this is called political genocide. Also, let's say Kurdistan was used to be divided between four countries. Only the borders divided the Kurdish land. In North Kurdistan, Bakur, and in Rojava, Kurdistan, there was only a borderline, and from on both sides of the border were Kurdish villages. That also is true for Iraq and Turkey, for Bakur and Bashur Kurdistan. Both sides of the border were Kurdish villages, Kurdish cities. Now, Turkey wants to demographically split Kurdistan. I mean, to force the population of the Kurdish cities on both sides of the border to evacuate their ancestral lands and to replace them with radical jihadists, the families of Nusra, the families of Daesh members. So what Erdogan calls a safe zone, it is a terror zone. It is a terror zone of 1,600 kilometers long, ranging from Afrin in the northwest of Syria to Sidakan in northeast of Iraq. So Turkey wants to evacuate all these areas, to depopulate all these areas from their Kurdish inhabitants and replace them with the families and with the fighters of ISIS, of Al-Nusra, of all those, let's say, jihadists which as refugees or not, Turkey uses against Europe and have been weaponized against Europe by Erdogan. So the land of the Kurds is being split, and a strip of jihadists, a strip of 50 kilometers depth is being created within the Kurdish land. It is like a stab in the back of the Kurdish land. These lands get divided. This process has started from 2016 on, when Turkey invaded Syria, when Turkey invaded Afrin, Serekani, and now Turkey wants to invade other areas, wants to invade Kobani, Qamishlo, all those areas. And this last operation in northern Iraq, in Bashur Kurdistan, is also a part of that plan. This is genocide. When you divide the land of the people demographically, and you bring people from other places around the world, and you replace let's say, the indigenous people of those lands with jihadists, this is also a measure of a genocide. And Erdogan has clearly declared that during the let's say 2019 United States General Assembly. He showed the map. He declared that. So world public opinion should be aware against that. And now Kurdistan Freedom Guerrillas are resisting against this genocidal campaign of Erdogan, of AKP and MHP, with which KDP and Barzanis are now collaborating.
Could you reflect on how far the forces in Tel Rifat and Minbij will go to defend the areas against Turkey? Because there are, of course, civilian lives at risk. What kind of considerations do the forces take into account while preparing for their defense?
Well, Turkey does not differentiate between civilians and the fighters. The truth is that for Turkey, the civilians and the fighters are the same. And especially when it comes to North Syria, the civilians are exactly what Turkey is trying to target. Because Turkey's aim is genocide. It is demographic change. It is to create a safe haven for the jihadist terrorists, for Al-Qaeda, for Nusra, and for Daesh members in northeast and northwest Syria. So in order to achieve this aim, Turkey wants to wipe out all the civilians in those areas it wants to occupy. So look at Afrin, look at Serekani, look at Tel Abyad and Gerispi. What happens to the civilians who have remained there? They are kidnapped on a daily basis. They are killed. They are held as hostages for ransom. Women are being attacked and raped. These are all civilians. So even in the areas that now are being occupied, the civilians that have remained there are the target of Turkey's genocidal campaign. And Turkey has completely changed the demographic map of those areas. So when it comes to Tel Rifat, Minbij and other areas, we don't have to think in the category of civilians or fighters when it comes to Turkish attacks. All the civilians are targets. We have to know this fact, that all the civilians are targets for the Turkish army, and all the civilians should defend their land, their existence, via all measures that they can take.
I would also like to ask something about how the KCK balances its different interests. On the one hand, in Rojava, the SDF needs the US presence to keep Turkey out. On the other hand, the co-leader of the KCK Executive Council, Cemil Bayuk, has said that the PKK is actually in a fight with NATO as well. Can you reflect on this balance, which seems kind of contradictory to some?
Well, the same NATO and the same US, which are now against the Russian invasion of Ukraine, they themselves paved the way for the Turkish invasion of Syria from 2016 till now. And they have turned a blind eye on all the Turkish war crimes in North Iraq and North Syria. Just today, four civilians were killed in South Kurdistan. Some days ago, a boy and his grandfather were killed in Shingal. Some weeks ago, two small children were killed in Bamari in South Kurdistan. Also, there are regular Turkish drone attacks in North Syria. So all these are the war crimes of Turkey happening before the witness of the United States and NATO. It was with the approval of the US and NATO which Turkey invaded North Syria, invaded Afrin, Serekani and Gerispi, and subjected those areas to demographic change. So the US should leave that double standard policy of opposing invasion in one part of the world and encouraging invasion in another part of the world. Turkey Everybody knows that Turkey is the main sponsor and supporter of Daesh. And Turkey is at the same time a member of the coalition against Daesh. In fact, Turkey is the Trojan horse within that coalition. All the coalition members should know that Turkey is the Trojan horse in the international coalition to fight Daesh. Because Turkey is not serious in opposing Daesh. Abu Bakr Baghdadi and Qureshi were killed in areas in Syria which Turkey has invaded, which are under the control of Turkey. And just yesterday, another Daesh main figure was arrested in Jarablus. So all this shows that Turkey harbors and supports Daesh. So the United States has the moral and political obligation to prevent Turkey from invading North Syria, because the peoples of North Syria, the Kurds, Arabs, Yazidis, Armenians, they fought shoulder to shoulder and helped the international coalition to defend Daesh. Now Turkey wants to take the revenge of Daesh, and Turkey attacks those places which were the hubs of resistance against Daesh. Turkey attacks Minbij, Kobani, and other areas. These are the areas which were the hubs of resistance, the symbol of resistance against Daesh. So the United States needs to leave this double standard policy when it comes to the fight against Daesh, and when it comes to Turkey's threats of occupation against both North Syria and Northern Iraq. Now, in Northern Iraq, the United States and NATO have given Turkey a free hand to bomb those areas. Now, within 2 months, they have bombed Northern Iraq for more than 2,000 times. So, the United States has to stop this policy and help stability in North Iraq and North Syria.
Thank you, Sagros. That was very insightful. Thank you very much for being my guest in this podcast, and I do hope I will welcome you again in the future. Take care.